Our next speaker, the presentation is entitled, A Qualitative Analysis of Implementer Perspectives on Adaptation to an Evidence-Based Intervention for Teen Dating Violence Prevention. And our presenter is Kathleen Krieger. She's a public health analyst for RTI International. Prior to working at RTI, she was a community educator for Planned Parenthood affiliates in Oregon and Michigan. Her research areas are adolescent health promotion, teen dating violence prevention, and health communication. She is working with the Health and Well-being of Women, Children, and Families program at RTI International.
Thank you so much. This presentation really fits in really well with Leah's presentation. I'm going to talk today about implementer perspectives on adaptations that they make while they're actually implementing a teen dating violence evidence-based curriculum, and also their conceptions of fidelity to those evidence-based curricula. So we wanted to know more about the factors that contributed to how implementers adapt curricula. How do they consider, select, implement, and document adaptations? How do they tell that their adaptations are effective? And what are their thoughts on fidelity to the curriculum? How do they interpret what is implementation fidelity? We collected two different types of qualitative data. We conducted individual informant interviews with 7 coordinators and 13 implementers from teen dating violence prevention initiative sites that were using teen dating violence evidence-based curriculum. Almost all of these interviews were conducted on-site and in person. We had 2 RTI staff at each interview, one to lead the interview and the other to take notes. We developed interview guides based on our research questions, including how participants assess the fit between a given curriculum and their students, their school and community, and their own background. We asked participants if they made any adaptations to the curriculum, and if so, to explain those adaptations, describe their rationale and their process in making those adaptations, and then how they assessed the effectiveness of those adaptations. We also asked them to define implementation fidelity and how they believed that fidelity to a given curriculum may affect the curriculum's goals and outcomes. We also conducted online focus groups with 10 implementers from 16 dating violence prevention initiative sites. Participants were asked to log on to our online focus group at least once per day over a 3-day period and answer questions as well as comment on each other's posts. Each day included a new question that was based on a hypothetical scenario of a potential issue that could affect implementation. So day 1 was devoted to a scenario and questions regarding logistical issues like time. Day 2 focused on issues with students' learning styles and abilities. Day 3 focused on students' social abilities and cultural context. We had 2 RTI staff monitor the online focus groups, ask probing questions throughout the 3 days, and encourage participants to react with one each other, like, you know, if someone had a post, to comment on that post. All of the qualitative data was coded using Invivo software. We analyzed the content using deductive and inductive analysis procedures. And incidentally, the data reflected similar findings in both the interviews and the online focus groups. So I'm first going to talk about what we found in terms of implementers' adaptation processes, and then about their conceptualizations of fidelity. We found that the first step in implementers' adaptation process was identifying mismatches between the given curriculum and all elements in their current implementation situation. Implementers described 3 broad reasons for making adaptations. First, and this was the most important, to fit their students better. Implementers shared an underlying assumption that student engagement and understanding are fundamental to learning. They continually assess their students' characteristics and needs in relation to the curriculum. One of the most common examples of this was when implementers make adaptations in the moment, when they notice that their students are bored or simply not getting it. An adaptation could be something as simple as an extended discussion or turning a discussion or lecture into a game. Implementers also might know about the characteristics of their students ahead of time. One participant talked about the difference of implementing the curriculum dependent on student readiness to hear the content. She noted that some students didn't have the life experience to relate to some parts of the curriculum. She said, "We have had some young men that are not fully there yet into the dating scene. They're playing video games and hanging out with their friends, so they couldn't relate to what was going on." They also make adaptations to reflect their own skills and beliefs. Implementers often explain that they draw on their particular skills and training in considering how material could best be approached. Those with strong beliefs regarding sexual violence and victimization reported making changes to the curriculum treatment of those topics. One participant explained that implementers at her site used their theater background to make adaptations to the curriculum. She said, "We have a lot of implementers who are comfortable acting, and our seventh graders respond better to acting or reading. The curriculum allows for that because there are several characters that come back and implementers will bring them to life, like use a mustache or a blue wig, so the kids automatically remember the character from the last time." And finally, they make adaptations to deal with resource constraints. A common issue with lack of sufficient classroom time to teach the evidence-based curriculum exactly as written. In addition, implementers made adaptations to fit the physical space or resources. For example, participants described shortening a lesson or skipping one or two activities to be able to fit the curriculum into a shorter amount of time. Implementers make adaptations either in the moment or planned, and on their own or with other program staff. The process of making in-the-moment adaptations was often so intuitive that implementers really struggled to explain to us the steps or process in which that they did this. They would just do it automatically, and to them, it wasn't almost a decision, it just happened naturally as part of their teaching. Implementers also made planned adaptations, often with coworkers. For example, one coordinator explained, "We usually try to assess the kids in lesson one and then talk about the subsequent lessons and how we will adapt it when we are looking at the next lesson." A group of implementers might identify a common challenge to implementing the curriculum and come up with ways of addressing that challenge. There was one activity that all implementers had difficulty with at one site, so they came up with a slightly modified version of that activity. Experience informs ongoing and future implementation because they kept tweaking it if it didn't work the first time around. Implementers made two different types of adaptations. First, adaptations to the curriculum content. These included changing details to reflect culture, use recognizable terms, and be more realistic, adding supplemental material like clips of music videos or movies to enrich understanding and increase relevance, and abbreviating or omitting content due to time constraints or to avoid material that they disagreed with. For example, one implementer explained why she changes names in scenarios. She said, "The students have a very strong connection to their cultural background. If I say Zoe or Fred, those names don't mean anything, and they don't want to be interested in this scenario. My kids look at me like, who is that pretend person? And it doesn't resonate with them, and the story doesn't hit their life at all." Implementers also made adaptations to pedagogy, or the way the material was being presented or taught. These included teaching the content in a more engaging way, meeting the practical needs of the class by restructuring activities to better deal with behavioral problems or student needs. For example, one implementer explained that her group would change how they taught some scenarios. She said, "Sometimes we'll change activities. Maybe we'll change the role plays and make it more like a talk show." Implementers continually assess student responses, engagement, and perceived comprehension to determine whether further adaptation was needed. Implementers used a variety of methods to determine if their students, quote unquote, got the material or not, including asking questions, testing recall, and gauging student engagement. Implementers described continually observing students' reactions to the material, almost in a subconscious way, and that kind of relates to those in-the-moment, unplanned adaptations. One participant explained that she assessed student response by this. Less behavior issues mean that there is more engagement, so it's working. If my kids are fully engaged, sitting, listening, watching, or if the kids are sitting back with their hands folded and they are not engaged or running around saying, this is stupid, I don't want to do it, I think engagement is a good way to gauge. Student responses to adaptations informed ongoing and future decisions about curriculum implementation. For example, if an adaptation like changing a quiz into a Jeopardy game went really well with one group of students, an implementer might use it again. While all participants described making at least some adaptations, we found that they actually had varying approaches to the meaning of curriculum fidelity. So all participants that we talked to were trained by master trainers to implement the curriculum with fidelity. Their interpretations of fidelity, however, were really varied, and we found that their definitions of fidelity did not necessarily correspond closely with their reported adaptations. So one group defined fidelity, as you might expect, to deliver the curriculum strictly as it was written. So my visual example here is of a McDonald's hamburger. So when you go to a McDonald's across the U.S., it can be anywhere, it can be Boston or North Carolina, you're expecting to get the exact same thing. And it's made in the exact same way. Other implementers focused on adherence to the curriculum, but indicated that it was okay to add activities or discussions or change how the activity was done, but not change the content of the activity. For example, one implementer explained, but for me, there is fidelity to the specific objective to teach students X, Y, and Z. But if you have changed the activities, you have met fidelity. Fidelity is to the information, not how it was delivered. So going along with the McDonald's burger theme here, if one has a basic McDonald's hamburger but adds extra cheeses and veggies, it's still a McDonald's hamburger. In the same way, if an implementer simply doesn't delete any components of an evidence-based curriculum, but adds activities or content or does an activity a little bit differently, it's still the same evidence-based curriculum. And finally, one group described a fairly encompassing view of fidelity, based on being responsive to student needs or being true to the material. For them, fidelity meant ensuring that the core concepts were being taught, but the parts of the curriculum could be adjusted to the needs of the students or taking full advantage of their own experiences and abilities. They explained that strict fidelity is neither feasible or desirable. For example, one participant explained, it means not changing a lot of the core materials, not changing the core messages, not just cutting random activities, but thinking about what is the goal of the lesson. If we run out of time, making sure those objectives are being met. In the same way, a black bean burger has the same core components of a McDonald's hamburger. It has a bun, it has a burger, and some condiments, but it's tailored for a vegetarian. It wouldn't be appropriate to give a McDonald's hamburger to a vegetarian. We all know that, right? So our study is subject to some limitations. There's a possibility that social desirability affected how our implementers answered our questions. The sample size is small. We had 20 interviews and 10 online focus group participants. It's also possible that we interviewed only the all-star implementers, the ones that were actually interested in our study and wanted to talk to us. And there is some sample overlap between participants of the in-person interviews and the online focus group participants. So in summary, we have two key study findings. First, the implementers consider adaptations as necessary to maximize the chances of achieving outcomes similar to those demonstrated in research, but in their own context. And second, that their approach to fidelity is more likely to be based on doing whatever is needed to help the students achieve these outcomes than on adherence to the curriculum. So our findings suggest the need for exactly what Leah is doing, in fact, looking at how can we train implementers a little bit better on knowing those core concepts. Making real-time adaptation guidelines, because many participants describe making adaptations in the moment or on the fly. Having fidelity indicators that assess student responsiveness as well as adherence to the curriculum. Curriculum development that anticipates likely adaptations and is informed by implementers' experiences. And we've been thinking about some future research. We could better unpack implementers' assessment of implementation situations, as well as compare developers' and implementers' perspectives on program theory. So finally, I'd like to acknowledge the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation for funding this research, as well as the implementers that participated in our interviews and online focus groups. And here's our contact information. Thank you. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we interviewed people from all across the country, so the subgroups within their own communities they often talked about. So yes, the representation could be endless for multiple groups, and we did note that. Mm-hmm. I think we found that across the board with at all of our sites, actually. So no, we didn't see a difference because across the board at all of the sites, implementers talked about that very issue. Mm-hmm. Yes?
My question may deal with your future research.
Right.
And I was wondering especially about the in-the-moment and how well maybe some of the implementers were able to document that. Because you're kind of thinking, okay, you adapted it on the fly.
Right.
But you documented it so the next time
right. You'd
be able to replicate what you know.
Exactly. Well, they often don't document it. Then they often don't even perceive of those on-the-fly adaptations as adaptations. Some of this was emerging findings that we got in our analysis. So yes, that I think that what we were finding was that implementers were very reflective and in the moment. They were reflective practitioners to what was going on with their students in that very moment. And it makes sense. If you go to a classroom like on Halloween and you try to implement an evidence-based intervention, the class is going to be crazy, right? Maybe you have to do an activity with Halloween candy or something like that. And they might think about that immediately and just do it and not even think of it as an adaptation. So, and what we believe is that we need to find out what those adaptations are. They could be really useful for other implementers and for program development.